What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And here we are, finally, at the first day of the summer of optionality. And I wanted to give you guys a list of just sort of things that I believe up top about this summer. I spent a couple hours last night kind of putting things in chronological order best I could. Start out, though, Lakers fans should have high expectations about this summer. I know there's a certain degree of like, they're just going to kick the can down the road like they always do mentality. That the first time I heard about the summer of 26 was actually when I was still working with the Lakers late in 23. And so this has been a summer the Lakers have had circled for a long time as the opportunity to really reshape the team. But with options come lots of pitfalls. It doesn't mean you're going to make the right choice all the time. But it is exciting. I think Laker fans should be excited. This is the first chance to really reshape the team in a minute. And if you love the trade machine, this is a great summer to be a Laker fan. You're also going to have to be very careful about the media that you consume. We'll talk about that a little more later and continually throughout this offseason. Now, as far as the team construct goes, D, I think this is going to be a team that's built around Luka and Austin. We heard how Pelinka was talking about Austin, and I think that very much the construct of the team is built around those two guys being there. Now, where I'm at on that whole idea is I want it to be like a 2A or 2B type of situation with like a high-level athletic four who can score on the ball, and that might be LeBron. But I don't think that LeBron is considered a pillar just because of his age, and we'll get to that topic in depth for sure going forward. But in terms of the chronology of events, the first thing that's going to happen is going to be the NBA draft, which is also, I think, has great potential to be an explosive one because I think that's where Giannis gets traded. And he's the biggest domino of the offseason. So even for teams that are not involved in that trade, it impacts all the other deals. So I do think that this draft has a great chance to be very eventful. From the Lakers front, I think the Lakers will be in on Giannis, but as I've said all along, I think it's likelier there'll be a third team, and we'll explain why later. Then after the draft, you've got player options with the Lakers. That's DA and Marcus, but also all around the league, you find out who opts in and who opts out. I think the Lakers will also look to salary dump both Vando and Dalton at one point to try to just totally clear the books and really re-envision the team. And then I also think the Lakers are likelier to keep this year's pick than not. I think if it's traded, it's like traded up or traded down. But I do think we'll have some rookies from the draft on this team, or at least one. Going forward, then, once free agency starts, the Lakers can't wait for LeBron to lay back and evaluate sort of the, we'll see what this team is, like the Rich Paul message kind of at the beginning of the summer. That's for cap reasons as much as anything. Lakers got to build the team first. Would love to have Marcus back. I think Rui is the most interesting Lakers free agent rather than Austin. I think we still got to pay close attention to the playoffs and rewatch the OKC series, the Houston series, and all of that. And that's about it, D. I wanted to just kind of have my little preamble out there at the beginning, whichever direction you'd like to go. But that's sort of how I see the roadmap to this summer.
Yeah, I think the draft, as you mentioned, is the first real fork in the road for the entire league. And I think it's the first fork in the road for the Lakers, especially. Much has been made of the Lakers' three first round picks that they can trade at the draft. And it's because they're counting the pick that the Lakers are about to select in this upcoming draft. And so if there's a deal where the Lakers are trading draft capital, and you're not just talking about trading picks way out into the future, for 2029 and 2031 or whatever, that means it includes the pick in 2026. It's interesting that you say you think the Lakers are likely to have that pick on their roster or are likely to use that pick.
Likelier than not. That's just my feel of things. I don't think it's certain.
I'm very interested in that idea just from the standpoint of cost-controlled rookie deal contracts are super valuable, and I get it. Like, we're seeing how much that matters in the Western Conference playoffs right now with OKC and San Antonio, but all over the league, I think it matters.
And the draft is the only place the Lakers can control getting that youth and athleticism that they were just talking about. Yep. They can get it in other places, but this is the only place where you don't need other things to go right or some player to decide they want to take a chance on a role with you. It's like, no, you got full control of this.
And I agree with that. So one of the ideas that bumps up against a second idea ties back to a point that you made about Vando and Dalton. Now, traditionally, if teams want to get off of salary, there's a cost that comes with that. The Lakers, though, are also a team that projects to have cap space. And so they are a team that can typically help other teams shed money in ways that matter. I'm very interested in this idea of the Lakers potentially trying to split the baby, where if they're looking at a player who makes $30 million, who is maybe locked up for 3 more seasons or 4 more seasons. Like, in fact, I'm going to give you a tangible example right here. Jalen Suggs, his extension's kicking in. He's going to be making a lot of money now. I think close to $35 million.
32. He's got on a descending contract. So this year's 32. 32.5, I think. Yeah.
And I think he makes that amount of money for the next 2 or 3 seasons in a declining contract. Mm-hmm. So it's like 32 and then like 30 and then 28 or something like that. But he's owed $80 million or close to $90 million over the next 3 seasons. And the Lakers, in theory, could say to Orlando, would you want 2 expiring contracts that make half of what Suggs makes in order to get off of Suggs's money? And we'll consider that net neutral. You don't have to incentivize us to take off money from your books, and we don't have to incentivize you for absorbing contracts, because in the end, we're saving you whatever, $18 million or $16 million next season. And now you can go about into business with Anthony Black or whatever other stuff that you want to do. And the Lakers get a good player. I'm not recommending that trade right now to anyone. I'm just using it as a tangible example of money that we don't necessarily want on our books. And you have something that we might want that is expensive, and you want to clear some money off of your books. And so this is one of the ideas that I'm also exploring when we talk about trade machine ideas and things like that going into the offseason, Pete, is that there's countless different ways the Lakers can try to leverage cap space. And it's not always going to be a, I'm going to absorb your full player into my big amount of cap space. It could be, I've got $12 million of salary here in Vando that I don't necessarily want. Would that player be useful to you? If only because he makes $12 million for 1 year and not $25 million for 3 more seasons.
Right. I think it's important to understand the pressure that's on the top payroll teams, of which I think there are 4 that are really right in the center of this. And then another 4 that are close enough to be motivated, I think, to make deals. Now, there is the second apron basically functions as a hard cap in the NBA, and it's $222 million this upcoming season. There's only one team that's already projected to be over that, and that's OKC. OKC's payroll balloons up to $250 million this summer because of extensions that kick in. So they're the only team that's over that 222 mark. But then Denver, Cleveland, and Orlando are the 3 other teams that are close enough to where they're going to want to have a degree of wiggle room. I think this is especially true of Denver and Orlando in that they fell in the first round. They're far enough away to be like, we're right up against the ceiling, D, and we're not close enough. So we need to make some moves.
Denver traditionally also, Pete, has not been a high payroll team. They have typically not wanted to pay the tax, and they made a cost-cutting trade last summer where they swapped out Michael Porter Jr. for Cam Johnson. And this summer, they've got an interesting contract decision on Peyton Watson, who is a restricted free agent and is sure to garner interest on the open market. He's been linked to the Lakers, but Chicago could use another rangy forward. Watson's of an archetype that typically has value around the league. And so Denver's an interesting player in the do they want to shed money discussion as well, because they've also got a player on their books who helped them this year who is going to be much more expensive next season than last. And the same is true of Orlando when we talk about Anthony Black.
Yeah, the timeline on Black is 1 year past that, but the extension is eligible this year. Let's go to break here, come back, keep it going. So yeah, to that point with Denver, if they want to keep Watson, they're going to have to move somebody else, whether it's Cam Johnson or Aaron Gordon, Jamal Murray, go over to Cleveland, whether it's Evan Mobley as the biggest contract, but you've also got Harden and Mitchell. You've got Jared Allen in Orlando. It's Suggs, Wendell Carter. There's a few players, right? They've got to move money somewhere that where it's like, okay, who's available? So if you're wondering where the pressures are around the league, it's, I think those four teams are the main emphasis. And then there are others that certainly have other reason to do that. And so another example of what you were talking about earlier that I wanted to bring up with respect to around a $30-ish million player, let's take the Giannis trade, for example. Let's put some details around what it might look like with the Lakers as a third team. Andrew Wiggins was a name that the Lakers have been tied to off and on for the last year or so. And in the past, it was like, well, trading Rui and a first to make that happen from the Lakers' perspective. I think you can actually do that. And if you're trading a first, you're at least salary dumping Vando and Dalton in the process of it. So that's by helping Giannis get to Miami. The Giannis to Miami is one of the top destinations in terms of the rumors and all of that. From Milwaukee's perspective, you're going to want all of Miami's picks. You're going to want Khalil Ware, probably Jovich, maybe Jaquez, although he's coming into a contract situation. But young picks and talent, right? That's generally what teams want in that type of circumstance. But Andrew Wiggins doesn't do a whole lot for Milwaukee, right? They could possibly trade him at the deadline, but I would argue he's a lot less useful to them than just not absorbing the money at all and having a traded player exception, which we'll get into more, I think, more of the reason why I think TPEs will have a greater impact on this summer and going forward. Like, I think Miles Turner might end up in Boston on their TPE. But it gives Milwaukee basically a level of cash to spend in a league that has this pressure of like players that need to be moved for financial reasons. Yeah, we'll take on your bad contract, give us a pick. I think they're in asset accumulation mode and that the Lakers could help them do that. So if you could reroute Wiggins to the Lakers in that type of environment, I think from a Lakers perspective, you'd want to get out of some money. Like, Wiggins is a little pricier than I'd want relative to his talent level and age at this point, D. But that's one of the examples, like this whole idea we're talking about the financial pressures that teams are feeling. There's also financial reasons from the Giannis trade and from Milwaukee's perspective of like, we don't really need okay players right now. Like, what does Tyler Hero do for them or Andrew Wiggins, aside from being a potential trade chip at the deadline? And if Miami could flip that, like, they would turn them into picks too in a deal like this. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. The Giannis domino being what it is and trying to determine what Milwaukee actually wants out of a Giannis trade, I think is the highest piece of state secrets NBA stuff that is probably out there. I don't think they've telegraphed their hand quite yet. I think many people like you and me and national media are forecasting what we think makes sense for Milwaukee, right? Which is, to a certain degree, a teardown of sorts. It's a, we don't control our own picks, so give us a multitude of picks from other places, possibly, where we can recoup our own drafts through the drafts of other teams. And I think with the prospect of lottery reform on the horizon, the possibility that the teams that even make the play-in could end up with a possibility of getting the number one pick overall. Like, it'd be a very slim chance, but it would still be out there that Milwaukee would be wise to say, well, let me get as many bites of the apple as I can, but from different places.
Yep.
And so they may say, well, hey, Lakers, can I get a first round pick from you in this deal where you get Andrew Wiggins? And the Lakers might say, well, okay, but you have to take this from us as well. You need to give us some salary relief within the context of this idea, because we still want to maximize cap room going into the summer. And we're not just going to say, oh, well, of the $40 or $50 million in cap space that we had, 2/3 of that is going to Andrew Wiggins. And now our summer is just like, that's it.
It's just an example. I don't think that Wiggins specifically is like, that's number one on their board or anything like that. It just, yeah.
But I'm playing out the scenario within the context of what Milwaukee is going to do. And it also takes us a bit down the rabbit hole of what negotiations can be like and how you get to a certain point and this doesn't sound as good anymore. And this is where I think, to your point, the Lakers fans should have high expectations, but meeting high expectations is difficult when you're the one who has to deliver on them from the front office perspective, right? Mm-hmm. If it was easy, everyone would be able to fulfill expectations. Like the Luka Doncic trade is a home run, once in a generation sort of deal. You don't go and make those every single summer. The Lakers are going to have to be smart and execute at the highest degree with this, but the optionality of having cap space and saying what we can do is leverage this way. They could also just go into the restricted free agent market and say, do you have the guile to pay this guy what we're going to offer him when it's going to impact your books in these ways? And I think that that's a whole nother branch of the tree of free agent spending or cap space that the Lakers surely have on their big board of options this summer.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's why I think the idea of getting bang for your buck is the overriding principle that should govern their own free agents, how they approach restricted free agents, how they approach the trade market and who they're willing to take back. Is that is really going to be what determines. It's sort of like, you know, your mom sends you to the grocery store with $100 and says, come back with ingredients that we could make a really nice meal for everyone with. And where you spend the money, like there's a whole bunch of options that you have within that, D, but really being efficient throughout the whole process is what ends up with the best overall result at the end.
We're Lakers fans, so there's a certain amount of we want things to be a certain way, and we're going to admit our biases where we have them. But I want to ask you, how well positioned do you think the Lakers are this summer because of their cap space in a league where right now there's only three teams projected to have like significant cap space? A few other teams can get to significant cap space by making moves to shed salary. And the Lakers are, of the three teams that have significant cap space currently, the Lakers are the only team that's actually good. And so where does that position them within the marketplace? And twofold question. How strong is their hand? And do you fear that they could overplay the strength of their hand going into this market in ways that undercut them?
In that whole spirit of having a lot of options, there's a lot of bad options in there as well. That, of course, that is a worry that I have. I do think they're holding a strong hand. I don't think they're holding a dominant hand, but I do think they're well positioned. And I think where they land is, you described really the Venn diagram of we've got space, but your good players are also useful to us in a way that a lot of times when a team has cap space, it's because they're going to be bad. They're tanking on purpose. They're Washington or Brooklyn. And they're in a position where they just want to asset accumulate. And your good players, like they view that they are doing you a favor by taking on Chris Middleton or CJ McCollum and Terrence Mann over to the Nets. That as a result of that, you have to give us some draft compensation to be the third team that participates in this other thing that you need to get done. So yeah, unlike those Brooklyn and Washington type of teams, the player that you are looking to trade, say if Aaron Gordon were available, Lakers should be all over that. I don't think that they would land him or anything like that, but there are going to be good players that are on the move that for whatever reason, their team has to get rid of them in a way that they would normally cost draft compensation to be rid of. But the Lakers, unlike a team like Brooklyn or Washington that is so far away from contending, Aaron Gordon is a fantastic player, but he would be so much less useful to them. And so you end up coming to deals when every party's needs end up getting met rather efficiently. And I think the Lakers can provide that sort of like, you want to make this other deal, but you got to get out of other money to be able to make it happen. And the other places for them to land don't really need a player like that, but the Lakers do.
Let's take a break here, Pete. And when we come back, I want to yes and no you with that last example. My concern is the threshold of player that teams will consider good, and are willing to trade. So you're right. Aaron Gordon would be great. Aaron Gordon's too good
for this idea. He's too key to what they do. Yeah.
Right? One thing I was looking at is Denver did something interesting last summer. Two players were extension eligible last summer for Denver, Christian Brown and Peyton Watson. And they paid Brown and did not pay Watson. And Watson is now entering into his actual restricted free agency, and Brown's extension is about to kick in. And all during the second half of last season, when Brown was sort of struggling and not playing to his dollar amount, while Peyton Watson was looking like a key rotation player, particularly with Aaron Gordon out, there were lots of did Denver pay the wrong guy questions. My sense is that if Denver wanted to get off money, it's either going to be Cam Johnson or Christian Brown level player. It's not going to be an Aaron Gordon level player. And that the Lakers, I'm wondering about threading that specific needle where, yeah, you'd be helpful to us, but for the same reason your team is willing to trade you, particularly a team like Denver, in order to pay the player that they actually want, then where does that land the Lakers?
So in that situation, where could Denver trade Christian Brown without getting money back?
Right now, they could only do it with Chicago or Brooklyn, I believe, is the other team that has that is projected to have real cap space.
So you could say, if you were one of those teams, and the Lakers are a third team that you could do that with, if they were like, we really like Christian Brown, you could probably get him for free. Now, where that threshold is amongst all of those teams that we talked about, the four teams, we can debate and we should debate every individual player. How do you like Cam Johnson? How do you like Christian Brown?
Yeah.
Like, so Jalen Suggs, you brought him up earlier. He pinged for me as a guy that's higher up on the quality list, although he was not good in these playoffs. Mm-hmm. They're not going to want to just get rid of him for free, but they also have Anthony Black's extension. That's why we brought him up. And I brought up to you yesterday, I was like, bro, I would trade a lot for Anthony Black because he only makes $10 million. So if they were like, no, we like Suggs, we want to keep Suggs, but they're going to have a hard time paying both of those guys. My thought is like, whichever dude you don't want between Black and Suggs, I think Lakers should be in on that. And in Black's case, him only making $10 million, if you could get him, that allows you to build out a monster team this year, which is why I would trade more draft compensation for him. But yes, where that line is for all of those teams is important. There's that natural pressure that's going to exist of they gotta send this money somewhere without taking anything back, and there are very limited options. And then the Lakers can also turn the screws a bit through restricted free agency, where if you don't move off of one of those guys by the time that rolls around, and like, here's an offer to Watson, and figure it out, Denver, right? Like, you could put some pressure on them in that way, but I just think the biggest natural pressure is the fact that there isn't many places to send a player without taking money back yourself.
Yeah, and this is where I'm very interested to know how strong those pressures are internally for these other teams. Is it enough to give away a good player for nothing? It's hard to stomach.
Do you agree with the premise that the second apron is a functional hard cap?
Yes, I do. Unless you feel like I can definitely win the championship with this team, then I don't think any team wants to be in the second apron. And we just saw Boston. Boston essentially did this. They traded two starters.
That's right.
And then let their two other backup centers just walk.
OKC is $28 million over the second apron right now. The additional cost for payroll that would cost is somewhere between like $110 and $120 million. Extra dollars on top of the payroll they already owe just to pay that. The same thing's got to happen with them. They're the most extreme example. Then you've got a couple of other teams that are like right there that also have to pay a guy.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see what OKC decides to do. When we talk about them being so high over the second apron, that includes all of the team options they have, right? Which they can decline if they wanted to, which makes players free agents, but great. Potentially they could go into negotiations with them immediately and ask about taking less money or whatever. People have talked about OKC using their draft picks to consolidate and potentially move up. And I think that that's very much a possibility, but they could also say, well, we've got Isaiah Joe, who's a good rotation player. Do you want this player for nothing?
I would like Isaiah Joe for nothing. I would like Aaron Wiggins for nothing.
No, totally, right? They make, I think, $12 and $10 million. They have two players who were essentially injured. Players 1 through 13 could all play in an NBA playoff game if they needed them to. OKC, they could easily say, well, look, three of these guys, we can just get rid of them and still have plenty to compete.
And in the spirit of optionality, that is an option for the Lakers to be able to take on those lower salary guys. And if they want to be a team that goes 11 deep, 12 deep, you got to have a lot of guys that are in that like $8 to $10 million range. Luke Kennard is an example of a player in this class. That is another way for the Lakers to build out if they wanted to just have what they have at the top and then just have a lot of good players. That is one of the choices the team can make.
We've got a long offseason. These are ideas that are going to bubble up over and over and over again in a lot of our discussions. We're also going to have a whole string of pods evaluating the season that just happened coming up soon. And so we're not mashing our foot on the gas in terms of like free agency discussions in the middle of May. That's not necessarily what's going to happen with the pod right now. But I'm very happy that you wanted to have this conversation today in the aftermath of yesterday's discussion, which came on the heels of JJ and Rob talking, right? Because there is way more anticipation for what's coming up than reflecting on what just happened. And part of the reason why is Luka didn't play. And like the Lakers sort of went into the postseason with that free money idea.
I also want to digest my food a little bit with the season. We were very intensive in the details that I'm a big believer that when you are like that, you're really in the weeds of something, step back from it for just a little bit. You'll get more accurate reflections on it while not waiting too long so memory fades.
The thing I will say to close this idea up, though, Pete, is that the optionality idea that is the buzzword around the Lakers is very much real. Right now, the number of like $45 to $47 million, they can easily have that in cap space. That number could jump up to $50 million if they actually don't use their first round pick. It can jump up to $60 million. Or $65 million if they trade Vando. It could be close to $70 million if they get off of Vando and Dalton. It could be more than that if you trade Jake as well. Now, obviously, that's...
You lose something every time.
You lose all your cap holds, right? You lose all your bird rights to all of your players. That means Marcus and Ayton both become free agents. This is stripping the roster down whole. But there are levels to all of that. There are layers to this onion. And the idea of saying, no, the Lakers could be in the mix for Giannis and give Milwaukee a $50 million trade exception, right? They could also be in a Giannis deal where they are the third team, the way that you described. They could also be not a part of the Giannis deal at all and be in the restricted free agent market and say, no, we're going to stress test Utah. We're going to stress test Denver. We're going to stress test Detroit. They could also say, where are the value free agents? We can pay you $1 million more than the tax MLE. Like, oh, you want to get Keon Ellis for the taxpayer MLE of $6 million? Well, if the Lakers actually liked Ellis, and I don't know anything about that, they could say, well, do you want $7 million? Do you want $8 million to come and play with us instead? Right? And this is where cap space can matter, and it's how they can be difference makers within the market. And so when I asked you the question about how strong is the Lakers' hand, and you're like, I think that they've got a strong hand, but not a dominant one, that's sort of where I am as well. The thing I will say is that you can also get too high on your own supply. They're going to need to be precise with what they do.
I think the way that we'll approach this going forward is zeroing in on specific options. All right, we'll be back on Monday to really start that process of zeroing in on different options. And I think we should talk a little bit of LeBron because his name did not come up in this. And what happens with him is such a big topic that I really want to get into that. So until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. With his eighth block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal!
Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one, miss it!
Bryant, unbelievable. For the victory.
It's over.
And shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes!
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.